Abby and Jim, welcome to Around Cincinnati.
Hi, Jane. Great to be here.
Hi, Jane. Thanks a lot.
Abby, you're the director of the Skirball Museum at Hebrew Union College. And Jim, your photographs taken more than 30 years ago in 12 Nazi concentration camps are on view there right now. I'd like to start by asking Abby why these pictures, dating from the period of the Cold War, have a particular significance and why they've been chosen as the Skirball's photo focus exhibition.
When I first saw these photographs, they were so surprising to me on so many levels. First of all, they are in color, and my entire experience of Holocaust memory in terms of images that I had seen were in black and white. So right off the bat, it was very compelling to me. In terms of photo focus and in terms of these photographs, as you said, that were taken during the Cold War, at a time when the camps were rather sterile, often sanitized, a lot of that has changed in recent years. Since the fall of the Berlin Wall, there's been a much greater attention to really telling the story of the Holocaust in a more meaningful way at these sites. But apart from that, in terms of the photo focus theme this year, which is called Photography, the Undocument, it's really an effort to look at photography as a document, what is real, what is not real, sort of looking at those boundaries, looking at those relationships between reality and unreality, and thinking about these photographs and the reality that they were for Jim when he took them, and the reality of those places as they were during the Holocaust, and then the reality of them in the 1980s and the reality of them today. It was an extraordinary opportunity, I think, to really have a show that related very strongly to the theme of this year's Photo Focus.
Jim, I wanted to ask you, what drew you to making this extensive record of the concentration camps some years after those people who had been in them had been freed or had disappeared?
Well, I was quite young then. I was 31. And having grown up in an upper-middle-class suburban Midwestern neighborhood in which you wouldn't think much racism or anti-Semitism was present, but in fact it was in large and small measures. For example, German-American neighbors set our house on fire and riddled it with gunfire. And I remember as a three-year-old wandering into a neighborhood movie theater to see a comedy, and before the main feature came on, newsreels of the concentration camps were shown. And it stayed with me, and it was very impactful. Imagine, you can imagine, as a three-year-old. Other events occurred throughout my life leading up to that point, and I wanted to go to the places and confront them directly and visualize them and try to awaken the deadened sensitivities I had from seeing so much imagery of the Holocaust. I think this happens to a lot of people. You get kind of anesthetized to them. And that's what led me to go there and do that.
Well, you went to Europe twice to take these photographs, first in 1981 and again in 1983. Why did you feel that you needed to go back again?
Well, in 1981, went to nine camps and had completed that work and had visas and permission to enter the Iron Curtain countries, Poland in particular, and Czechoslovakia. At that very moment, martial law was enacted in Poland, as you may remember. And while the State Department told me I could go in, they said they weren't sure they could get me out. So I thought maybe I wasn't going to go then. So I returned to America, and it nagged me that the project really wouldn't be complete or comprehensive without those camps which were the most notorious, namely Auschwitz, Treblinka, and Majdanek. And so 2 years later, I returned and finished the project.
Well, in all, you visited 12 camps in six different countries. Were there significant differences from camp to camp?
Oh, absolutely. That was one of the most memorable parts of this project. In some places and in some countries, there was nothing there. Maybe there was a field with a marker that had overgrown grass and you couldn't really tell what had happened. So there's a camp in Germany called Bisingen, where there was a shepherd tending his flock of sheep, and somebody lived in the local village. And they told me about it. Otherwise, I wouldn't have known it existed except for a small marker. And as I stood there, I saw across the valley a 15th century Hohenzollern castle. I imagine what the prisoners may have thought being imprisoned and seeing that, and it was really quite compelling. At other places, the camps were intact. For instance, if you walked at that time anyway, if you walked into Auschwitz, it was intact. You could walk through the barracks. Some of the crematoria had been destroyed, but there other at least one other one you could walk into. And so in Auschwitz in particular, there was a palpable residue of evil. It may sound weird to say that, but I could really feel that even 40 years later.
Why did you choose to use color film rather than black and white?
I think in each of us resides a personal archive of Holocaust images. They're in our heads. It's a different archive for each of us. Certainly there are some common images in those archives. And I wanted to make pictures that were juxtaposed and were dissimilar to those that are housed in our personal archives. So it would be difficult for viewers to turn away and just think about the ones they'd already seen and say, these are similar to those. There's not very much importance in them. So the use of color was a way to both jar viewers, challenge viewers, and also to shorten the distance between past and present. I gave a lecture once where somebody in the audience yelled at me and said, "The Holocaust happened in black and white. How dare you photograph them in color?" Now think about that. What a remarkable comment. And so my pictures show sunny days and puffy clouds and colorful outfits and people frolicking in some cases through the camps as if they were amusement parks. If you think back in 1943 or 1944, whatever, 42, there were beautiful days in which many unfortunate people were murdered. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to close that gap.
Abby, what do you expect people to take away from this exhibition?
Well, capitalizing a little bit on the remarks that Jim just made about this sort of separating us from what our collective memory is of the Holocaust and closing that gap, this is really an extraordinary opportunity to think about secondary witnessing. That refers to people who did not actually experience these events, but who are still reacting to it. And we are at a point in time when we are losing people who were eyewitnesses. There are fewer and fewer survivors living, and we are now faced with how we, as generations that did not experience this, are going to think about it. And this is one way of looking at these places that for many people are hallowed ground, sacred in terms of the terrible losses that happened and the terrible tragedy of the Holocaust. But at the same time, it's almost as if we have to think about the clash with modern culture. We have to think about these sites. As Jim said, people come in all kinds of clothing. They frolic. And so immediately it makes me think about the selfie stick at places like the 9/11 Memorial or at sites of the Holocaust. Think about Pokemon and how we've recently been reading articles about places that are hallowed ground are now sites where people are playing a game with their phone. How do we treat these places? How do we think about them in our day? And these photographs really sort of open that conversation, and I think they are provocative in that way, but real conversation starters about the Holocaust and popular culture today.
There's a complimentary exhibition to this one at the Center for Holocaust and Humanity here in Cincinnati, and it's called Through Their Lens, Photo Reflections on the Holocaust. Can you tell us just briefly something about that show, Abby?
Yes, absolutely. The Center for Holocaust and Humanity Education is our partner in this exhibition. Sarah Weiss, who is the executive director, and her staff have done a remarkable job in helping us to develop educational and resource materials for this exhibition. And along with our exhibition at the Skirball, the Center for Holocaust and Humanity Education, which which is located on Montgomery Road in Rockwern Academy, is featuring an exhibition of photographs by people from our community, students, teachers, individuals who have been to these sites and have taken their own photographs. So again, thinking about this in terms of people who have gone to these camps and have taken their own photographs and thought about that in the context of their collective memory of the Holocaust, it offers yet another lens through which to see this horrific series of events in Jewish history and human history.
Well, these exhibitions are important reminders of things we mustn't forget. Thank you, Abby and Jim, for coming in to talk with us about it.
Our pleasure.
Yeah, thank you very much.
We've been talking with Abby Schwartz, director of the Skirball Museum at Hebrew Union College, and with James Friedman, the photographer whose work makes up the exhibition, 12 Nazi Concentration Camps, on view through January 29th. For Around Cincinnati, I'm Jane Durrell.
Es war einmal ein Drache, der hat ein großes Maul und Zähne wie ein Tiger und Hufe wie ein Gaul. Hatte immer Hunger und fraß die ganze Stadt, fraß Länder auf und Völker und wurde doch nicht satt. Hat von früh bis abend gefressen und geschmatzt. Doch bei dem letzten Bissen ist ihm ein Mensch